Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Jane Oates, the president of workingnation.com is the website. Hi, Jane. How are you today?
Hi, John. I'm great. Happy spring. 80 degrees in Chicago. I wish I were there.
Yeah, it's right around the corner. I'm looking at blue skies. It's a lovely, a little cool right now, but we're finally going to get a warm spring day here. Jane, let's talk a little bit about college graduates. I would imagine in the last couple of years, such as school was, graduates were probably able to find jobs. The labor market has been diminished. Or at least there's been plenty of jobs for graduates. What's the situation right now?
Well, I think it's tough for this year's group of graduates, John. I mean, there are economists who are saying we're looking towards a white-collar recession. You know, I don't know whether I believe that, but I certainly, if I had a kid graduating this May or I was a graduate this May, I'd be nervous about that. So I think there are some things they need to do in the wake of this skills-based hiring that we're hearing. They have to be able to clearly articulate their skills in addition to just their degree.
I'm going to talk to you about that, but just talk to me about a white-collar recession. That's interesting, and I think I get it. I think all of us know or have heard stories about the need for people in skilled trades. You don't think if there's a recession, it's going to hit skilled trades as much as white-collar?
I think they're going to be, especially because of the federal investment, I would lead with that. You know, all the billions of dollars that the federal government has pumped out for infrastructure and things like chip manufacturing. I think it means that people who have blue-collar skills, who are in the building trades unions, who are doing home repairs, who are in manufacturing, who, you know, went and got, you know, certificates in things like welding and machining, I think they're going to have more opportunities in the near future.
In the near future, I think they have, I presume we're saying the same thing. They've got opportunities right now. If you have those
right
skills,
now,
you get a good paying job. And if you're just graduating from an apprentice program, there's a job waiting for you, isn't there?
That's exactly right. You know, those apprentices are employees from day one, John, when they go in. But I know what you're talking about. They're not going to get apprentice pay anymore. They're going to move through that apprenticeship program and get a higher paying job as they have mastered those skills.
But the white-collar recession, and I'm thinking of companies like Google, some TV networks, some other platforms have all been laying people off. Is that the sector you're talking about?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we keep hearing about a generative AI. You know, we hear about ChatGPT most of all. And you wonder how many people, I don't think they're going to take away writing jobs per se, but how many people in their first job out of college do the first draft of something for their superior, for their supervisor? I'm not sure they're going to be as needed anymore. And I think that right now people are doing belt tightening in industries that were really open to new college graduates in the past. Industries like, you know, PR, industries like financial services. They took a lot of new graduates. I'm not quite sure they're going to be taking them in that number. We've already seen some down numbers, you know, from different people who do surveys saying people who had a job promised to them when they graduated, but now their start date has been postponed. Or people who were sure because they had a really positive internship with somebody that was going to translate into a job, and it just hasn't yet.
Yeah, I'm interested in what you think about what degrees then. It's too late for kids graduating now or maybe in the pipeline now, but I'm wondering what degrees look like the best bets. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jane Oates is here from Working Nation. Jane, you said something that I thought was kind of interesting to producer Pete. You said, let's talk a little bit about looking for jobs in a nonlinear way. What does that mean?
Specifically, when Pete and I were talking about tech, and, you know, you've heard all the crazy stories about right-sizing, I think, but the layoffs that are coming from the mega, the Metas, the Googles, the Amazons of the world. But people who study tech need to understand that there are jobs available at utility companies, at school districts, in local and state government, all across every sector. They are dying for tech talent right now. So if you feel like you took those really tough courses and graduated with a technology degree or a mathematics degree, don't despair. You're going to get a great job. You can go and you may stay there for your whole career in these other sectors doing tech work. But I think it's the same for everybody. You know, if you're a psychology major, not sure what you want to do, there's a lot of openings in HR. There's lots of openings in messaging companies, like, you know, the companies that tell people how to think about things in the utility sectors. And don't forget to look at associations, you know, even though, and they open the whole world of nonprofits to you. I mean, there are nonprofits that are dying for your people skills, for your writing skills, for your organizational skills. So don't be afraid to look someplace that you wouldn't have been your first or second choice as you were going through school.
I see a list here. Well, I don't see a list. I'm wondering if you have one in mind of sectors that are still showing growth, although I think you're sort of touching on it. I was talking to a young lady over the weekend, though, who's about to graduate with a degree in nursing. She's going to be an RN. And, you know, we just all kind of roll our eyes like, well, you get to have any job you want anywhere you want it if you're an RN right now. I think
that's exactly right. Hot, hot, hot.
Any others that you think are attractive right now? I don't know if that's considered white collar, but what other areas seem to be hot right now?
Well, certainly teaching is hot. There's an incredible teaching shortage across the board. And there's opportunities for people if they're graduating from school and didn't go through a traditional teacher's ed program to look at the state's alternative certification route. So, for instance, you know, if you were a history major and really hoping you'd get picked up by a consulting group or by a think tank, and that's not happening, think about teaching for a while. But I think the big message is, you know, especially people who went for business degrees, John, they were dreaming about Fortune 1500 companies, and they have really overlooked the incredible opportunity in small business. You know, you go to work for a business with 100 or fewer employees, you learn as a new college minted graduate, you learn all aspects of a business. It's almost better than a graduate degree, because you get to see everything. Whereas if you go with a big company, you get to see the little niche that you were hired into.
Yeah. Get a load of this, Jane. John, I'm so happy for my 32-year-old son. Our extended family has always unfairly looked down on anyone who doesn't have a 4-year college degree or a white-collar job. But now my son, a welder and carpenter, is in his prime, and he can name his job. Bravo for him. Yeah, I want this kid's name and number. I might need to hire him, right?
Amen, right? I think it's exactly, you know, this skills base brings new dignity to the jobs that we all relied on our whole lives. You know, plumbers, carpenters, people that can fix your home when you need it. God knows, HVAC people, you know, your air conditioning goes down on an 85-degree day. You want an HVAC connection immediately.
My son works for an HVAC company or an engineering firm, and he was just telling me about the HVAC division. And he said, you know, if you can do metalworking, if you can do plumbing or electrical, he said, walk in the door. You know, there will be a job for you, and a pretty good paying job. Although I did want to mention that I'd heard that at least in the Chicago public school system, and maybe it has sunset, but they were doing an accelerated certification for some teachers, like special ed and so on, just to try and
absolutely
get
ESL bodies.
yeah
math. I mean, all high need positions are really someplace where they'll really bend over backwards. And you know, I'm a recovering teacher, and look, it was not a linear path. Teaching gives you skills that are so transferable to other occupations that you might be interested in.
773 said, my daughter never thought she would work for a nonprofit. Well, she just started her new job with ENA and loves it, says Marlene. And 847 said, what can I do with an education certificate besides teaching? What skills would apply to other jobs? Yes, some teachers don't want to be teachers. hence the all of the openings, but go the other way. Well, what can I do with my teaching certificate?
A lot. I mean, there's so many opportunities now for online tutoring, both for American students and for international students who want to learn from an English-speaking teacher. It gives you the flexibility. You don't have problems like classroom management. You know, you're dealing with one or two people at a time. But I think other transferable skills are things like sales. I mean, people, there's really no college program that trains people in sales. But if you've been through a school of education program, you know how to task analyze, you know how to manage time, you know how to create curriculum, and you know how to work with people.
Jane Oetzer does, president at Working Nation, workingnation.com, for more information like this. Jane, we're going to call you again, as always. Thank you today.
Love being with you, John. Thank you and Pete.
Told the story earlier in the week that when we got our bill, you know, they come to your table with the tablet, the recommended tips were 22, I think it was 25, 30, and 35%. Maybe it was 20, 25, and 30. But the sort of featured one in the middle that was larger than the others and already pre-circled for me to aim was 25%. And I thought, I'm not feeling it. I mean, great time, great service, great people. It was a big enough ticket. 20% was going to be, I thought, $30. That's a fair wage for you being so nice at our table. So I didn't want to do 25%. So I swiped left. It's kind of a tricky situation, isn't it? And it's happening more and more at more and more places these days. Matt Schultz is a chief credit analyst at LendingTree, and he's writing about that today. Matt, you're on WGN. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
That movie I described, I'll bet you've been to it. A lot of people have been, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people have definitely felt that situation where it's not just that they're being asked to tip, it's that the restaurants are tipping the scales a little bit to where they're making it seem, they're presenting the easiest option as a little higher even than a typical tip would be. And our latest survey shows that about 60% of folks say that they're tipping more because of technology, but a lot of people feel it's gotten out of hand as well.
But it's working, huh? That is, the restaurants or the servers are getting more money as a result?
Yeah, it does appear to be working. And it's interesting because It's a combination of a couple of things where it's not just the fact that places that were used to tipping are trying to request more. It's also the fact that this technology and the spread of mobile payments and that sort of thing make it easier for people who traditionally we haven't necessarily tipped to ask for tips. And that's a whole thing as well.
Like what? What are some situations where that happens?
Well, any sort of vendor, any sort of place where you may just be picking up something instead of where you're not really interacting with anybody, and then any sort of kind of handyman or contractors and that sort of thing. There's plenty of examples, and the truth is that while a lot of these new payment systems are great because they do make it easier for us to pay people who do work for us, that extra bit of tipping can sometimes rub people the wrong way a little bit.
It does seem a little arbitrary, doesn't it? Which doesn't make it wrong. I mean, y'all get to decide if you're going to give somebody extra money for the service you're already paying for. But in the food sector, even if it's you pick up the food, walk it to the register, and pay for it, say a variety of situations, it's not uncommon to see a tipping cup or now a tipping screen. When I go to a bakery that I like, I say, I'd like that sweet roll, and then they put the sweet roll in the bag. I pay with my credit card, and there's a 20% opportunity for me to tip them. We tip delivery guys almost always because they're hauling rugs or furniture or whatever into our house. So We sure. know they're getting paid. But, you know, we don't do it like in a retail setting, do we? So the lady that spent some time with me picking out a suit and a tie, she was working hard and it was a great service to me. But no way am I thinking about tipping that person. It's just kind of funny how that works out, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's just something, that's just kind of how the culture and aspects of our economy have sort of evolved. And I think that the influx of these easier to use payment systems and technology are sort of challenging that a little bit, where it is saying, hey, it is okay, or we'll make it easier for you to tip a little bit to these people who you may not otherwise have done. And really, I tend to be a when in doubt tip, although I'm certainly not perfect with it. The one thing that you can certainly do is if it's a place that you go regularly or that you intend to continue doing business with, it's always a better idea to tip because that's part of building a yeah. relationship with a business.
I wonder if there's any thought going this way, that businesses know that there's some backlash. So, yeah, they're getting a little money now, but maybe people are going to change their habits if they just don't like that feeling every time they go out. Is there anything in your research or survey along those lines?
Yeah, it is interesting. We've found that about 41% of Americans say that they've changed their buying habits, you know, maybe where they shop and things like that, because of expectations of tipping. And about 60% say that tipping has gotten out of hand. So there certainly is risk to businesses, is as much as they'd like to have that extra money coming in. You'd also probably rather have that customer be happy enough and have them come back.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the balance that a lot of businesses are trying to manage.
Yes, two tips at 18% are probably better than an occasional tip at 25%. Did you ask what percent people are tipping at restaurants and bars? I guess that's mostly where we run into this. What's the percent that people are giving these days?
Yeah, it's at restaurants, about a third say that they typically tip about 16 to 20%, which is the most common answer. Maybe not surprisingly, about 55% said they usually add 15% or less, and about 12% said that they add 21% or more. So it really does vary pretty widely.
But 55%, so just a little more than half, tip 15% or less?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's
there's the nut, right? I mean, that's why maybe these businesses are encouraging you to tip more if still half of us are tipping 15% or less. I thought that was the old measuring stick.
Yeah, it for many, many years, 15 was kind of the traditional number, but really over the last decade or so, we have seen 20 become more standard. And I was a little surprised to see that number that you just mentioned. So you certainly can't blame the businesses for trying to reach to grab a little bit more money and kind of test boundaries a little bit.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how this kind of goes forward in the future.
Well, there's the fine line then, isn't it? A lot of folks are tipping 15 or less, but businesses, if they try and make it easy to tip more, might alienate the customers anyway. So you can read more about that dynamic if you go to LendingTree.com. Matt Schultz is the chief credit analyst there. Hey, Matt, nice to talk to you today. Thanks for the insights.
Always good to be with you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we've got more business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Wells Fargo continues its retail push into the Chicago area. The bank has signed a lease for a new branch in Lincoln Park. Cranes reports it'll be Wells Fargo's fifth planned location in the area. The branch will be located in the apartment building at 2411 North Lincoln. Wells Fargo locations are also being planned for Fulton Market, River North, and Old Town in Chicago. Another is planned in suburban Glencoe. Until recently, the bank had been focused locally on commercial and mortgage lending. Wells Fargo is the nation's fourth largest bank. Rising costs are forcing job cuts and streamlining of functions at Common Spirit Health. The Chicago-based nonprofit Catholic Health System says it's cutting leadership and administrative roles at the division and national levels. Common Spirit reported a net loss of $244 million in its fiscal third quarter. The health system says it's focusing on patient volume growth and other steps to increase revenue. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The Business of Food with Steve Alexander.
Yes, and we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Is Chicago in danger of losing one of its biggest players in the business of food? Well, several hours before Brandon Johnson was inaugurated yesterday, Terry Duffy, the CEO of the CME Group, said moving out of Chicago is on the table if the mayor goes through with his campaign suggestion that the city raise money by taxing financial transactions. He says perhaps it was campaign rhetoric, but...
First of all, let's make one thing perfectly clear for your listeners. Mr. Johnson has no legal authority to impose a transaction tax on my business. The state of Illinois and then the federal government are the only two entities that can do so. So I'm hopeful that he deals with some of the issues that are of concern, and most of those are around crime, and doesn't get too bogged down on how he's going to short-term think he's going to raise taxes on certain people in order to fit his agenda. We need to have businesses open. We need to have people walking into those businesses. You need to have commerce. You need to have people living in here. You can't chase everybody away. Everybody is afraid right now because of whether it's the crime issue or whatever. So I think layering on additional cost as you're trying to fix one problem would be a catastrophic mistake. As far as CME's property in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, we don't own anything any longer. Hmm. We put ourselves into a very strong position many, many years ago. In our leases, we have a language in there that says if there's something that's ill-conceived from the city or the state, that our leases are null and void. So we're in a really strong position. We have options coming up on our long-term leases already. So that doesn't mean we're leaving. We like Chicago. We think Chicago's been on its back foot before, and it can get back on its front foot. But it takes all of us to do so. So I want to be a part of the solution, not part of the problem. Again, we're in a strong position from a whole host of reasons, from a risk management, as I talked about earlier, to a real estate. And if there's any ill-conceived taxes, you know, we're in a very strong position. If we had to leave, we could leave.
Terry Duffy, the CEO of the CME Group, on the Bloomberg podcast, Odd Lots. Checking the food calendar, today is National Barbecue Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Tuesdays on the Terrace. I've done this a couple of times. It's fantastic. Otez Gary is the manager of community engagement at the Museum of Contemporary Art, kind of north on the Mag Mile-ish. Otez, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, good morning, John. Or good afternoon, John. How's it going?
Pretty good. I've been there in the early evening for Tuesdays on the Terrace, have enjoyed beverage and food and jazz. What's new this year?
Yeah, so this year we're inviting and opening up our genres to include a little bit of everybody this year. And so we have a house music coming to our terrace. We have bamba, and we have some hip-hop, we have some soul. So we got some new genres coming into TOT this year. Really exciting to invite some more Chicago artists into our series this summer.
How does it work then? So maybe a different mix of music, although it sounds like jazz hasn't completely left the terrace, right?
No, not at all. So jazz is still very much the main component. We're just our first time opening up more genres to be included in this as well, to just give more access and to invite more people to come down to the MCA to enjoy some music on the terrace this summer.
Yeah, right. So how do I do that? Do I buy a ticket in advance? Do I show up? Is it seating? How does that work?
Yeah, so you can reserve tickets once the web pages go online and all of the tickets go on sale. You can reserve tickets there. We do have a process of that. If you show up, you will get a place in line as well. So we try to fit in as many people as possible. 10 times out of 10, we get everybody in. So it's a guarantee if you either reserve beforehand or possibly show up, we can try to get you in as well. So either or is fine. But definitely, Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Well, you don't pay for going there, right? You just pay for the food and the beverage?
Yeah, the food and the beverage. You can also bring a blanket if you want to. It is somewhat of a picnic atmosphere as well, too. So if you want to bring your own blankets or your own lawn chairs, it's also totally fine as well, too. And if you want to bring your own snacks as well, that's also fine. But we do have food and beverage to purchase on the terrace, too.
And it's pretty good, too. So June 13th is when the concert schedule starts. Is that right?
Yes, sir. June 13th, we open up with Coco Elise's, and that will be from 5:30 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday. And two 1-hour sets every time the performance happens on Tuesdays.
So Tuesday, starting June 13th, 5:30 p.m. until 8 p.m. It's Tuesdays on the Terrace at the Museum of Contemporary Art. What's the easiest way for people to, in their mind, imagine the location? Whereabouts are you in town, Otez?
Yeah, so we are 220 East Chicago Avenue. You can access the Red Line to get here, take the Red Line to Chicago, and then walk two blocks up towards the museum as well. So once again, 220 East Chicago Avenue. You'll find us here all the time.
So north side of Michigan Avenue then, right?
Correct.
Not too far from the Hancock Building and Water Tower and all of that. It's a nice location over there. And boy, what a great venue. I love the space. And a broader reach of music now. Otez Gary is the manager of community engagement there. You can visit mcachicago.org for more details. Okay, Otez, thanks for the thoughts today. Good job.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, John. Have a great day.